Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish. Publicize your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
I'm Caleb Zacharin, assistant editor of the New Books Network. And you're listening to New Books in Literature. Today, I'm speaking with Kate Farrell, Pamela Pierce, and Anthony Valerio about their new book, The Charles Street Trio, a novel in three voices. This is a unique project, and I'm excited to talk to the authors about their process and the genesis behind The Charles Street Trio. Kate, Pamela, Anthony, welcome to the New Books Network.
Hi. Hello.
Thank you. Thank you, Caleb. Thank you. And also thank the New Books Network for having us today.
Of course. You know, I'm glad to have you all on as guests. It's always fun to interview co-authors and hear about the process, because I think it's always interesting. It's different than a solo author. So I think before talking about the book, I was wondering if you all could just talk a little bit about yourself and your background. So why don't we start with you, Kate, maybe, and Pamela, then Anthony?
Sure. So I have been a storyteller my whole life. Learned at the knee of my father and grandfather, who were well known for their storytelling skills. And I've also been a writer my whole life. When I moved to New York City in the 80s, when I met Anthony and Pamela, I had a goal of being a writer, but financial reality hit. And so I worked in television. I've worked in television since the 80s, and I've done Olympics and major sporting events, reality TV. I currently am an executive producer of the franchise Love After Lockup. So basically I'm telling stories all day long at work, and then when I come home to write at night.
And I'm Pamela, and I have been writing since I can write. And in the second grade, I try to write a novel about a new baby in the family. And I engaged the child next seat to me who could draw to illustrate it. I have no idea what happened to it, but I've been writing since I can write. And in my 40s, I met Anthony, and I had the great opportunity of joining the small group that he had of workshops in his apartment. And I was part of that, which is how Kate and I are here together today. And he also worked with me to edit some material, which I've had great success with, I have to say. So my writing life has had various attachments to it. I was on staff at Penn American Center for 15 years, where I was the director of events and publicity. And I produced over 250 literary events. I'm also certified in the Amherst Method of Writing Workshop Leadership. And I have led hundreds of writing workshops. I have published a book, chapbook of poems, Widowland, with Green Bottle Press in London. And I continue to write. I have a variety of other projects I'm working on right now. And I also make visual art, which is another way of my telling stories. So very happy to be here. And thank you for this opportunity, Caleb.
Anthony Valerio here, book writer, professional book editor, which means I get paid doing that at the time, and a teacher. I just want to say about this project, which I'm a few feelings, not to get into it, but about myself, is that Pamela and Kate initiated contact with me, and it's been like for me now And during the project, a writer and an editor later on. And for me, it's like a writer exploded more than 40 years ago. There was an explosion and it caught up to me, and I'm in the process of it now. So you're hearing a feeling, hearing emotions of creativity, intense creativity. I am delighted to be part of this as a writer. That's what I would like to say at first.
I was wondering if one of you wanted to maybe introduce the project and just tell the listeners a little bit about what the Charles Street Trio project is and what it means to work together doing writing fiction.
Go ahead, okay. Kate.
I just want to say that the whole project started because I was watching a television show. And that was The Secrets of the Playboy Mansion, because I have worked with people associated with that entity. And I saw Anthony on television, and this was March of this year. And I was like, oh my God, I hadn't been in touch with him for a while. So I called him, found him, we talked, we all got together, and we decided that we would write. And just in March, we started just sharing stories, one, then the other, then the other, then the other. And I'll let these guys pick up from there.
Well, I thought it was a social opportunity. When I heard from Kate after 30 odd years, I thought it was a social opportunity, which I think that our original Zoom really was. It was just nice to be in the company. And there were other people who had been in the workshop as well, were not part of this particular project. But we kept talking, and we realized that we had, certainly I had material, I had inventory, as I call it. And there is a piece of new material of mine. The poem in this book is new. And that's really how it started. It just felt very warm and delightful, especially in the time of the pandemic, when I myself have been feeling very isolated, to be in the company of people who are really, I consider really old friends, very dear and old friends, and to create a project and collaborating really was just so wonderful for me.
I'd like to say a few words about what the book is at Taylor Bath, what it is. What it is, it's this little monster of a creative work that is Charles Street Trio. That is, there are three artists working on the same project around the theme of early years. So it doesn't meander endlessly. It is directed only by a loose theme. So there are more than 15 stories in it. There are visuals, mainly Pamela's wonderful collages and photographs, one of which is called a collage called The Golden Door, which to me was a door that I could walk into after so many years and delight in creating a work together, which I would like to say that collaborations are not easy. I've collaborated with a few people who, how can I say, we're quite famous. But those were mostly editorial collaborations. This was a creative collaboration, and it was extremely successful. And I hope your readers and listeners can, how could I say, enter this world of three artists working not at the same time, not following one another, in order, one, two, three, but then not exactly that. So it is a creation of spontaneity and order at the same time. So they are mainly stories around the theme of early years. It's book one of a book series. So we hope we shall be seeing you in the near future, Caleb, you know, as we go along. You know.
Yeah, absolutely. You all mentioned that you've known each other for a while, so I would love to hear about how you all first met. And also, you know, Anthony, I know that you taught Pamela and Kate, if you could talk about what it's like working with a former teacher of yours.
For me, it was very thrilling. And I said to Anthony that it was wonderful. I was very moved to have my name on the same book as Anthony. And a highlight for me of this whole process was that one day I had several conversations with Anthony, and we had worked on something naughty. It may have been a piece of my own work or whatever. And he said to me, and it was unforgettable, he said, "You know, Pamela, I feel like I'm working with another professional right now." And my heart leaped up. It was a very high moment for me. I was very moved by that. So I feel like I learned so much from Anthony, not only about all the mechanics of writing that you can learn from some and practically, you know, from other people, but Anthony really endowed me with two other things. One is that creating an identity as an artist. And a major thing that he did for me, where I was working on some very edgy erotica with him. And he said to me, "You know, I think your name is a little bit too understated for what you're doing." And that prompted me to go back into family records and pull out the name Manche, which is not my official, but that gave me more of an identity, a fuller sense of myself as a writer and what the possibilities were. And the other thing is that Anthony's routine, his ability to persevere and to write and to be dedicated to it, was I learned that from him on day one, and that I have never forgotten that. And it's been an inspiration to me for the last 30 some years.
Yeah. I mean, yes, Pamela, I agree with everything she said. I took a class at, I think it was the New School, Anthony, on family
portraits. NYU.
It was a class on family portraits. I'm one of 8 kids. I have a huge, you know, have family on both sides. My parents both have had a lot of children in their families. So that seemed like a perfect thing for me. And after we were finished that semester, Anthony made the offer to any student in the class that wanted to come to his place on Charles Street on Friday nights. And we would pay like, I don't know, $10 or something. And Anthony would review what we'd written that week and give us feedback. And, you know, I learned about elevating language. I learned about trusting what I felt. I wrote a family portrait during the class about my father I said that I know my father loves me. And Anthony said to me, "I don't believe you."
Did I say that?
You did. And it was for me as a young woman, a shocking thing to hear, but he was right because I hadn't earned that statement yet. Oh. And, I at first realized, I learned that I didn't need to take that personally. Like my father, you know, I could call him and say, "Do you love me?" And he was still alive and he could say that. But he taught me in that moment all that I had to earn in what I was saying. So now working with him as a fellow writer, I think that it's just a matter of, you know, each of us being honest with each other. If we feel there's something in our writing that we could work on or not, or praise each other, whatever. I work in a lot of writing groups, and a lot of our writing groups, we edit each other's work, but we didn't do this here. We only edited our work at the very end to make sure that, you know, content and grammar and all of that were precise. But it's been really nice to you have to have, your story has to be ready. You have to be your own editor. You have to be everything. And of course, Anthony or Pamela would tell me if something was out of line in one way or another, but that's not how we worked. We were all sharing our writing, coming from a confident and assured place. I hope that answers your question.
But it's like a highly functioning family.
Yes.
Where people are independent and free to do what they want, but there's a support system in place. And I think that's how I would define this, as a very high, well-functioning writing family. And what could be better than that?
Nothing.
I want to thank Pamela and Kate for, you know, what you said about past, about working together. I mean, picture this. It was a four-floor walk-up in the back of a building on Charles Street in the Village. And the beauty of it is, it was absolutely quiet. It was in the back and it was quiet. And on Friday nights, they would walk up 4 flights and we'd work together. Now, the difference for me is, just to say, I'm really pleased and proud and very proud of the work Pamela and Kate are doing. I mean, it's in process still. And the main difference for me, I believe for myself, was I was very highly trained. I must have read thousands of proofreading sheets and edited paperbacks under great teachers who are no longer with us before they walked in the room. I was very highly trained, so I was confident that I could listen to, even today, it's one of the few functions, frankly, that remain as 100%, is that I can listen to page, you know, like 20 pages and remember what was on the bottom of page 4. I mean, it's just a skill you develop. It's very technical, frankly. So anyway, that's what happened there. And then getting back together, as Kate mentioned, for me, it's like Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, where you create a monster, it's created anew. So here I am at this point in this stage, I feel created anew as a result of this project. Now, I'd like to say also about Pamela's professional, when we met later on. Here's the thing that I hope. I hope that readers, yourself, and you might want to comment on this, feel that the work thus far works as a whole, that it contributes in different ways to a fictional whole, visually, prose-like, and poetry. There are different genres, it's very diverse. That's my hope. That would, if that would happen with a few readers and that was successful, I would be very pleased.
Yeah, I would love to hear about that sort of incorporation of different genres, not just different genres of writing, but also imagery. And I also think it's interesting too that this is, you know, the first installment in it's almost like serialized. It reminds me of like a and not, you know, novel, 19th century novel that might be serialized in the back of a magazine, like Harper's or something like that. So, you know, I'd love to hear about what that was like incorporating different writing styles and creative styles.
Kate, you want to go take that one? No? Pamela, you want to talk about that?
I'll just say a little something, which is I think that it's interesting that you should point that out, Caleb, because that in our original discussions, that came up more than once about serializing and breaking things up and putting other material between parts of one piece of writing, for example. And we did talk about that, but one of the expressions that Anthony used, which was very, very helpful to me, is building. And he would say, you know, he was gathering the work and he would say, we're building, so send me work and we'll gather it all together and then we will figure it out. We'll figure out what kind of order it should go in and how we can break it up if we wish to. And that's how we arrived at this final product. It was very intuitive and instinctive about how things should work. And I think Kate pointed out about putting, I don't want to take language away from you, Kate, but I think you use that of cleansing your palate, that the artwork, for example, in between different stories was a way of cleansing you, refreshing you, and then you move on to the next story.
Yeah, I want to say something about that in particular. When I first got the hard copy of the book, and I was reading the end of Nectar, my story that ends on page 14, and when I got to 15, and Anthony, your Coney Island photograph of the swing up in the air, it was to me, oh, I got a chill remembering it and also feeling it. It's like, you know, I'm talking about something very kind of spiritual and otherworldly. And then there is that beautiful Coney Island photograph. I feel wow. Like it was so well placed. And that for me is a great example of how these different formats, photography in particular, help this book feel like something different.
Yeah. By the way, I'd just like to say, I was reading your story, Nectar, this morning, and it's very, for me, very powerful piece. And maybe later on, Caleb, if we could read like a half a page each, maybe we could hear that. So,
yeah,
as far as the diversity, what happened was we had an order of people, of three of us, doing what we wanted to do on the theme. And then let's say Pamela began, and then Kate began, and then I would go, and then Pamela would go, and there would be no talk about what, who should do what or what. My larger scope was, to me, that this was kind of like a symphony. And what I was hearing was, and seeing, I was seeing also different things. So what happens when you train as an editor, there's a sense of balance. So there was a balance of visuals, linear, poetry line, and they were all kicking in separate ways at the same time on the same piece of music. It was a symphony of different genres, if you will, different voices, but all working at the same time in relation to being balanced. What that balance is, I probably could not say right now or draw it, but maybe someone else could, you know what I mean? We were creating it from the inside, a diverse project. That's right. What it is, that's what happened. And that sense of balance is impossible to describe. How do you know exactly when something is balanced and when it's off balance? If at the end there was a piece about, I think Kate's mother, was a sad piece, it was a great piece about loss. And I said, you know what? Let's try to end this a little bit more on the upside and humor. Maybe it needs a little humor, a balance, you know? And so there was a piece about a house painter, which was kind of, you know. So that's how that came in. It was what you feel is needed to create a whole that's balanced and interesting and fun, you know, fun to read.
Yeah. So chorus with solos.
Kate has a way of coming in with wonderful description, which is in the in the book trailer. Actually, those are her words floating across the book trailer. By the way,
I want to just say briefly that I think that one of the things that about Anthony that influenced me the most as a writer is his courage in creating forms. I mean, several of the things that I created with him, and Anthony went on to be editing my work, is creating forms that are not like other forms that are out there. And his support and encouragement of my doing that, I mean, that was as creative an act as there possibly could be to create forms of writing that are not, that didn't exist before. Mm-hmm. So I really have to thank Anthony for that. And I think that he led us through this, that we could create this volume in a very, very different way. And I got stuck on the idea that a novel, you know, there's the definition of a novel, and there's also novel. Novel, the definition is something new and not resembling something formerly known or used, original or striking in concept or style. So I went right to the word novel. What is a novel and what does novel mean? And that's what novel means. So this novel is novel.
I'm glad you said that, because I was actually going to ask why I call this a novel, but that actually answers it very nicely. Two things that I'm wondering, and any of you can pick up on either aspect of this, but just the role of both place and family. Obviously, New York features very prominently, and so do memories of the past. So I'd love to hear about what it's like writing about a place and also writing about family.
Well, I mean, just a few words about that. I mean, you could take the Brooklyn. How's it going? You can't take the Brooklyn. I don't know. I mean, no matter what I do, no matter where I've gone, no matter how many lives I've had, I mean, you can blindfold me and I could find my way through Flatbush. And also lower Manhattan, you know, in Manhattan. And it's about, I mean, I think you learn, I think, you know, it's just a material, you know. I'm not one of those people who say you have to write about what you know. I'm not saying you have to write about anything. You find your way to your material. But the material is rich. Now, and we've hit upon the early years as a logical beginning point of a series or a serial, as you would say, you know. I mean, and then it worked in that it worked in to be very rich, you know. The next book, however, if you might, we're not going to get to what we're going to do next now, but just to say, we're not sure if we're going to follow the life cycle. We might interrupt the life cycle, let's say, with a book about, say, romance. You know what I'm saying? I mean, possible. So that's like, and that's something that I like, because I can look forward to it. I'll be traveling very soon. I'll have it with me. And then we wait to see if Kate goes first. Then when she does a piece and shares it, then it's the next person. It's like a batting order. It's like a batting order, you know. It's like, you know, Kate's lead off, you know, leading off. And then, so that's really what it is. It's ongoing. So it's an ongoing creative process, which is really satisfying, actually. As far as place is concerned, Pamela, you want to talk about family and place?
Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals, so you can go back to doing what you love this spring. Looking for gourmet meals? Try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus. And this is the part I really like. No fuss, no mess meals. Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning. You simply heat and savor the good stuff. Factor is the solution for fast premium meals without the need for cooking. Head to factormeals.com/NBN50 and use code NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code NBN50 at factormeals.com/NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
Well, thank you, Anthony. I think that, you know, my origin story begins in East Orange, New Jersey. And I was very influenced by summers in Manasquan, New Jersey, the Jersey Shore. So those are the three pieces that I have in there, or take place in those, you know, those two locations. And they're inextricably connected, my family and those places in New Jersey. I realized as I reread my stories recently that each one of them has to do with longing. That's a thread among my three stories in here. And two of the three are my longing to go beyond where I am in East Orange, New Jersey, to live a more affluent life, you know, with more comfort and beauty. And the other one to have a more glamorous and exciting life than what I'm seeing around me. So that's what I have to say about my family and place in this book.
Yeah. And just family for me, I had just come off of getting an MFA at Hunter in 2020 in memoir. And, you know, writing about my family is a matter of survival for me. Living with 10 people in one house and one bathroom is pretty intense. And in 2011, my brother died. 2012, a best friend died. Few days later, someone who was going to be married the next day drowned in the Hudson. And then in 2015, my parents died 25 days apart. So for me, this family story in this book right here is imbued with grief of loss and really of trying to survive a situation that I was born into, which continues to fascinate me.
Yeah. Wow. Really, what's wonderful about this project to hear things, to really feel grief that way. You know, I just, as far as I'm concerned, about writing about family, I mean, at NYU, when talking about that course, Family Portraits, NYU adopted that course from my book called Mediterranean Runs Through Brooklyn, which I was disowned after that was published. I tried to explain to family, to people who believe they're being written about and uncomfortable, that, hey, you know, the reviewers really loved this, you know, they're saying he must have loved his characters. It didn't matter. I mean, they just didn't like, I was revealing family secret. I tried to explain to them that it was my work. It's very hard to explain to people who don't do it, or not the world that we're talking about, that it's work. It's on a theme. It could be, you know, you could probably give us, I mean, now that we're this experienced triple play, you could give us a theme and we could probably write a book about it. It doesn't have to be family. It could be, you know what I mean? I mean, that's really what it's like. We became at the same time a small, you know, a small family of three, which is really, really very, really nice to me.
It's nice for me too. It's nice. Yeah. I just want to add that I'm ready for there are two things in two of the pieces. Well, there are things in what I have in this book that I know I have family members who are going to be uncomfortable. I expect that, but that's, hey, you know, can't stand the heat, get out of the kitchen.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, yeah. But, you know, but your piece, yeah, I know your pieces, there's a humor in it and love. I mean, yeah, it is. It's hard. I mean, that was one project where I have to say, I might not have done that. I really mean it. It was really, how could you say that?
But
that
if people didn't want you to write about them, they should have been nicer.
I don't think it would have mattered, man. I mean, I don't really think it would have mattered, you know.
Well, that's not my issue, but it's a good point, Kate. Very good point.
So, Caleb, I don't want to tell you how to direct this, but it's coming on 145. Is it possible to read
a half page
and just get the sound of the voices? Maybe your listeners would appreciate to hear what it's like. Is that okay?
Absolutely. You know, either any of you could read a section if you'd like. I can read one, whatever you want.
Would you like to read one?
Sure, tell me whatever you'd like. I'm happy to.
Can I go first? Can I tell Caleb what to read?
Sure.
On page, Pamela, why don't you read a little poetry first? Would you mind?
Yeah. Want to read a little poetry? Okay.
Yeah.
All right. First, I'd like to say I have a poem in this book, but I'd like to read what, to my delight, Anthony included as an intro to this poem, where I say, I fell in love with poetry as a teenager, and William James describes my experience perfectly. Quote, the strangely moving power of passages in certain poems read when we were young, irrational doorways as they were, through which the mystery of fact, the wildness and pang of life stole into our hearts and thrilled them, end quote. So I'll just read a couple stanzas of my poem, The Star. Listen, if you think the story of your birth will include you, you are so wrong. That, dear, is your mother's story. You probably came out in blood and wonder, howling, because she had not yet told you not to, ever. But all she said was that it was a close morning and that she had almost no pain. And in minutes, you were there, a living doll in her arms. Thank you.
I love that poem.
Thank you.
I love the you are so wrong.
Thank you, Caleb. It's true, right?
Think
my, think my mom still hates me now.
Think again, Sonny. Do you mind? I hate to tell you, read whatever you want.
I was going
to
read from Nectar.
Yeah, go for that.
Okay.
Yeah, could you, you know, it's really one of my favorite in a way. And could you please make sure you read the last line or the last two lines?
I'm starting on page 13.
Okay.
Because this is, I think, for me, one of the best paragraphs I feel like I've written. But
I agree.
Thank you. Mom, her four surviving siblings, and her parents slugged out of life in Fishtown, North Philadelphia, in a brick home where each of their six southern-facing windows peered out onto Palmer Cemetery, the plots populated with veterans of the Revolutionary and Civil War. I wondered if my mother lay in bed at night with the ghost of veterans, of shad fishermen who gave the neighborhood its name, of Lenape Turtle Clansmen and William Penn, who together signed a treaty under an elm tree, just a short walk from Mom's childhood home. She must have rummaged through the spirits that haunted her humble neighborhood on those nights when the breeze from the Delaware River delivered nectar, rising from the sugar factory, blowing west on cobblestone streets, flowing through alleys and past clotheslines, that sweetness landing in her dreams to connect my mother with her baby sister, who now wore wings in place of a backbone. Thank you.
Yeah, very powerful. That's beautiful. And also powerful, as far as, you know, my ear, my senses are.
Yeah, the last line, I see why you requested that to be read.
Caleb, for my part, if you would, there's a division of a story about a boy's little bicycle which one of the editorial changes you might be interested in was that was one piece divided by a divided piece divided by a piece of art. So what happened here with this project, all pieces begin to fragment off, which is, you know, it's kind of like, you know, kind of like a dream or a nightmare actually sometimes. And so there's a fragment of two pieces called the
Blue Streak.
Blue Streak. So I'd like to do together, would be a nice thing to do together, you and me, is that you read the beginning and then I'll pick up where you could start with page 44. You say at page 44 at the top, he was in the sunlight.
Okay, I'll go.
Okay.
He was in the sunlight. The corner was only two houses away, but he suddenly put on the brakes, stood up, and looked around for the old man. He'd be working in his garden, stooped low among his flowers and ivy, and emerged from it like a beast from the wild, slowly with measured steps. He was big, bigger than Dr. Pico, Frank, and Mr. Rapelli. The old man blocked the whole sidewalk and a vision of the corner. He had hair white as snow and a square red face. As he approached the blue streak, he smiled, and from his smiling lips and white teeth, the boy had heard it for the first time when he was 4 and heard it every day when the sun was out until he was 6. "Hi there, little Anthony boy." It was a great booming voice. It shook the trees and froze the boy. He dropped his hand from the wheel, tensed his arms, and surrendered his neck. The old man pinched a section of skin and pulled up. He looked at the tops of the trees. Gritting his teeth, he said, "Hi, Mr. Laklaka." The boy's mind fought for the magical words that would release the grip. He could ask after the old man's daughter with the Mona Lisa smile, Amelia. Maybe that's how old man knew when he was driving up. He missed having a son, and every morning when the sun was out, he hid in his garden and watched him set the blue streak on the corner. Then he timed his work with the tour around the block. Mr. Laklaka didn't mean to hurt him. You could tell from his smile. He blocked the sidewalk really, and truly just to talk to the little boy who lived on the corner, who hadn't as yet heard that many big people talk, so he wouldn't mind the strange accent. He might also understand that his old neighbor with the white hair and eager face was lonely. His heart was in the country of his native language, and that in America he used his hand instead of his mouth. He said only, "Hi there, little Anthony boy," because he didn't know anything else to say.
Oh, no. You could cut it there. That's a good place to cut it, to end it. Very nice. Thank you, Cal, for reading.
Yeah, of course. It's a great. I like the fact that everything is so snapshot oriented, and it's almost like for each section is kind of like a photograph, in a way. And obviously, you know, there's photos throughout. And Anthony, you actually took many of those photos. I was wondering if you could talk about
before I do that, I also want to say how the major contribution visually also from Pamela's point of view, how collages are really, really worth having. Again, it was on a theme, and also one of the issues that arose, for example, where some of the production, I can't do this in color, so we had to scrap that. So I had to slot in a piece about childhood, and then I had done a photo shoot of Coney Island. Actually, I was sorry to do that. So I had some of those, and some of those are in color, which are not in the book. So we may put up a website to show the photographs on the original, how they should look, right, in color and so forth. So there editorial issues came up, but Pamela is a serious collagist and photographer. I mean, a creative visual artist. I haven't taken photographs in a while. Don't ask me why. It's only when I go to Italy, I take a handheld Minolta and I take photographs, and they actually became very popular. It's just something I do to alleviate the loneliness of the kind of life we lead. I mean, the kind of life, a writer's life, an artist's life, you know, so I can get out in the afternoon. But so that's how that happened. We happened to have all of the material that we needed for this volume. We just had it. We started putting it together like 40 years ago.
The last question I'd want to ask before we have to go, and of course, you know, please come back when the second volume comes out.
Thank you.
But I was just wondering, you know, if there's, you mentioned a little bit what might be next, but, is there anything else you guys are working on, either the second volume, if you want to share about that, or anything Anything else?
Kate's lead off on this one. I think I put pressure on her, man. We talked about, yeah, go ahead, Kate.
Yeah, you know, I also have written a series, a television series that I'm hoping someone buys. So that's something. But for this next volume, I'm writing about the body. And I'm working on a story I've already written, but because of a lot of different things that have happened since I've written it, it's different and it's deeper and it's a little bit harder to just, you know, fly off and say, here it is. But it's about women and their bodies and what women always, I don't know one woman who hasn't had her body somehow violated in the world, in this life. And so it is about that. And that's what I'm exploring.
And I'll just say in ending that I am going to be reading this poem on the air. I am poet at large on Planet Poet Words in Space, WIOX Radio in Roxbury, New York. And I will be coming up, we'll be recording that next week. And I'm going to do my spot on poetry that connects about women and their mothers. So I'm looking forward to that. And I'm excited about that. And this is wonderful today. I've enjoyed this thoroughly, Caleb. So thank you so much.
Of course. Yeah. Anthony, do you have any?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. Following, you know, the question was about volume two, and then Kate, you know, in general spoke about the quote, the body. So I believe that we're going to follow suit and follow that theme. That's Kate's lead. Pamela and I agreed to do that. Now, here, one of the images, I could end with this because I hadn't thought about beginning with it, is my first introduction to Columbia was Remembrance of Things Past was 8 volumes of Proust. And I was not studying. I was on probation. I was a terrible student at that time. And but then I met a French teacher and he said, you know, Anthony, I think you might like this writer. You might like Marcel Proust. And when I opened the book and I had, you know, I was living on Broadway, I was living with Buddy Rich's band, Traveling Man. So when I started reading it early on, and this is how I feel now, is I love the world of fiction. It's hard to describe. It's like walking into a room of invented characters, of invented dialogue that was beautiful to me. Now his rhythm is, it was rhythmic, it was musical, it was sheerly beautiful, and I really never left that room. So what we're talking about now in book two of looking forward to the body, I'm sure there's a storehouse somewhere or these ghosts walking around talking about bodies that we'll pursue in volume two.
Sure.
So listen, thank you very much for this.
Wonderful.
I really
so
enjoyed
much.
This.
Yeah, thank you
very much.